in your book, Art, Life, and UFOs, a memoir, you sort of relate how not only is it kind of an accident that you become a UFO researcher, and we'll get into how that happened, but it's also an accident you become an artist at all. That's not what your father wanted for you at all.
Yeah. Well, I think that's quite true. I think that I really enjoyed writing about those early years and the some of the strains within the family, but also some of the joys and pleasures. And I even had a chapter about sexual awakening, which, of course, I guess is de rigueur now. You've got to do that because you don't get to be a human being without it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's true. But I was thinking to myself, man, I don't think I could write this. I don't think I could be quite as candid as Bud is in revealing some of these personal side.
Well, you know, George, the funny thing is that amongst my colleagues, UFO colleagues, two of them said to me that part of the book, they made them extremely uncomfortable, and they were not, they thought I should not have gone into it. And I think not going into it, because I don't go into it at any length, also it has a lot of humor in it, I hope.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But the thing is that not going into it would have looked like a kind of a hole in the book, and people would have said, "Well, what about how do you get involved with relationships and with women? He's been married and stuff. How did that start out? You know, there has to be a beginning." And so I felt, well, it does have to be a beginning, and that has to be told. So I went into that a little bit. It's not exactly a sexual tell-all book by a long shot, but at least I covered it, and I think I just reread part of that today. I was kind of looking through the book, and I think that's pretty well done. It's funny. It's very hard to imagine, to reimagine somehow writing this book now, because it took shape over the years. But I don't know that some parts of it I could possibly match today with a slightly tireder brain or whatever.
Well, I really enjoyed those parts because they sort of tell the world how Bud became Bud. And I was just saying, man, I could never write the same thing and reveal this kind of stuff about myself. I think I'd be too self-conscious about it. But it certainly helped to create a well-rounded picture of who you are and how you became the person that you are.
Right. Well, you know, I just didn't want to leave anything out. I mean, I had this feeling, when I say anything, any kind of area that is central to how a human being becomes shaped. And so I did certainly put in most areas that I possibly could, and the funny thing is that complex thing is that my relationship with my father, and you mentioned, has not been quite pleased with my becoming an artist. He passed away before I was really deeply involved in the UFO subject, but the problems with my father and still the love and affection that was present at the same time is just very complex. Several people have told me, Jerry Clark, amongst others in his review, that he thought that was the finest part of the book, in the sense that it was highly complex emotionally. There's some material there that was pretty hard to deal with, but he felt it was extremely moving, and maybe the part of the book he liked best. And the interesting thing is that's the part that my family hates. They all feel I've revealed things that I shouldn't have revealed, I guess. So they hate the part that many people have liked the best about the book.
You grow up in West Virginia with a stern father who doesn't want you to become an artist. He wants you to join him in the auto business at some point. You go to Oberlin College. You discover art. You end up, as soon as you can, to getting making a beeline for New York City. And it was amazing to me that you jump right into the thick of the art scene there, this Cedar Bar scene where you meet the likes of, I mean, you read a, you meet a who's who of contemporary artists. They weren't big shots in those days, but became really well known, right? Jackson Pollock.
Yes, exactly. Well, one of the things is that when I was at Oberlin and Robert Motherill came out, one of the major figures of the abstract expressionist movement, he showed slides and talked about these paintings. This was in 1952, and it was all radically new, and I was extraordinarily excited and wanted to get to New York as fast as possible. But when I got to New York, I thought, you know, here's this this rich world of these important people. And, you know, I just thought there, if this is going to be one of the most glamorous things, and I found out that the entire art world was about 250 people. They all got to know, you got to know virtually all of them within two or three weeks. Everybody went to the same bar. Everybody was broke. There was almost no money floating around. Nobody was making much money, even though at that point a number of the artists were becoming very well known. Pollock is an example. So the whole world was a, which I thought was a gigantic lake, was actually a pretty small pond at the time I got involved. So it was very easy to do, and the artists were very generous too. I mean, they accepted a kid. I was a kid at the time, and some were very, very helpful to me. But Pollock was a difficult individual at that point.
Well, the portrait you paint of a lot of them is that, you know, you think of the caricature of the starving artist, the troubled artist, the boozer, the drug guy. A lot of these guys fit it to a T.
Yeah, well, they weren't drugs were not a thing that I noticed at all in the early 50s like that. The booze, I tell you, was quintessential. And so I would say a majority of the painters really became eventually alcoholics and, of course, came to very short ends. Pollock, when I got there, Pollock was really practically not painting anymore and was really a terrible drunk. And the stories that I relay, the anecdotes of my dealings with him, because I was always trying to avoid him because he was trouble.